Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your host for this hour of Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you all so much for tuning in on this lovely Tuesday morning here on Burnaby Mountain. Before we get started with today's episode, I just want to acknowledge this show, as well as all of our shows here at CJSF, are broadcasted on the unceded and ancestral lands of the Hulkumilam and Squamish-speaking peoples who have been here since time immemorial. Now, we have a pretty stacked episode of news, community events, things going on around Burnaby, but before we get into any of that, I just want to give one last shout out to Main Island, an island that I visited for the first time ever in my life just a few weeks ago when I attended an exhibition at the Main Island Library for Wasanich artist Chris Paul. And I just had a really, really lovely time. I spoke to so many cool people and I made a piece about it. So for one last time, here is that piece about what's going on Main Island. Reporting from Main Island, this is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Last Sunday, June 7th, CJSF took a trip down to Main Island, one of BC's southern Gulf islands with a population of over 1,300. It became clear to me after only just a few hours on the island that the people of Maine take community very seriously. And I truly felt fully welcomed as soon as I arrived. The reason for the trip was to see a new art exhibition at the Main Island Community Library from Wasanich artist Chris Paul. A reception and Q&A was planned with Paul and the exhibition's curatorial team at the community library, and CJSF was invited to attend. Paul's artwork is heavily inspired by Coast Salish styles, portraying plants and animals native to his Wasanich homeland, along with the history and stories of Salish culture. As stated by Chris Paul himself, this exhibition, titled Rebuilding Our Connections, Walking in Our Ancestors' Footsteps, is meant to highlight the Wasanich people's connection to Main Island, and how colonialism disrupted this connection through residential schools, language loss, disease, and a lack of representation. Before the reception, we were able to sit down for a conversation with Chris Paul, where we spoke to him about what this exhibition means for him, its connection to the island, and most importantly, his family.
For me, it's like a huge reconnection with the island is the reason why I took a show on, and Main Island, or Skatak as they call it, is just an extraordinary place where my people used to meet, and it just the breadth of my art career, which each of the pieces go back to what's called the Sandwich series. And so, kind of retrospective since day one, almost, it feels like, you know.
And I noticed a running theme of your artwork and this exhibition relates to just the relationship between community and people with the natural world, with cycles, specifically, like, say, the life cycle of salmon in particular. Why is that important for you to depict?
I'm not depicting anything. It's actually, all of the art I do tends to be live art, like it's living. Like, I don't see something as not living, and even the art itself and wherever it goes seems to always take on a life of its own. And even the fact that I'm here today, I feel more like I'm being called by my own art to come back and just take part in the actual, like, it's like the action of giving or doing the art is now calling its energy back again to an art show I'd never ever thought I would do or plan to do. and it's kind of like how I've always kind of approached it already. And it's like anything else. You start something somewhere, and you never know where it's going to end up. I feel very fortunate to be back here again.
You alluded to, yeah, like this exhibition being reconnecting to that part of your heritage, of your family. Could you explain that a bit more, like your specific connection to Main Island?
Well, I think, like, you know, there's darker parts, like, in terms of this, what Main Island is, and Parascadac, and also how we connect back in a way that's... you know, there's, as far as I understood, there was mass graves on the islands that, and a lot to do with smallpox. And I think, you know, there was many times where it was just like a very beautiful place for people to come and live and be and just participate, you know, be a part of something. Like, you know, the whole idea of how First Nations people look at things, right? Like, it's, I think that's a real struggle now, like, say, with money and stuff. Like, there's really, you know, the real value is actually in the land and in the seasons and how we relate to it and how we become a part of it in terms of generations and how we look at that. And a lot of it has to do with either seasons or generations. The less dark part about it is I'm back here, and my people are back here, and they're participating here in the language. You can hear it here now again, and I think it's one step, many steps ahead of us, but at the same time, it makes it exciting. Like, you know, myself, about to have my first grandchild, and excited to have more, and I think that's seeing the next generation, and you find yourself in a place, yeah, just taking that part in your community. Like, you know, when I was first coming here, I was just a little kid, and now I'm here being almost a grandfather.
The next question I wanted to ask was, I noticed that some of the art also includes your family as well and your children. Mm-hmm. Why is that something that is important for you to be a part of the art?
Well, like, you know, like, I think all of us try and create meaning in our life. And, you know, one of the most incredible things you can do is have children, you know, and you realize you take your place in the world in a way that you're responsible for those people and those children or your family. And that I think the more you take that job seriously, the more you enjoy your life so much more, and it really creates purpose. And I've seen lots of people without children and, you know, trying to find a place, you know. And I think it's really simple. We're built a certain way, and when we have children, it really makes the priorities, and it just makes it really clear what to do with life. I know my family and myself, you know, we've been through a lot. You know, I went to day school and that sort of thing, and wasn't as hard as residential school, but it was still really hard, and many other things happened. But, you know, I find that once you have purpose, a lot of that stuff just falls away, and you can enjoy your life a lot more.
When you're creating, are your kids a part of the process? Like, do they ever give you feedback or suggestions or anything like that?
My kids are pretty big critics, and so, but at the same time, they're incredible artists, and I think a good critic also elevates you as much as it elevates them. And if they're doing art as well, they have to put themselves in the same position, some place in there. Their, I don't know, ego or something like that. I think it's more the stages. Like, you know, my kids were just little, and my partner and partners actually in between different children were they wanted to homeschool them and wanted to, like, I've had nothing but home births and that sort of thing, and I don't know anything different. I think that's an extraordinary way each experience becomes your experience. You vicariously live those experiences through them as they grow. And, you know, anywhere from their first step to saying mom or dad or whatever, and, you know, then being like myself, I'll be a grandpa soon. Mm-hmm. I think that's extraordinary. And again, it comes right back to purpose in life. You know, we could chase so many more things or create so much more wealth, or I think we miss the point, and that's when we feel empty, you know.
Would you say part of your purpose is reclaiming or reintroducing that connection to Maine?
I think Maine Island is always been a part of me, and really it's just getting to know myself in that way, and feeling there's a quietness, more of a quietness here, and there's a reason why people come here. And you know, in some ways I think it would all go on fine without us, but it's pretty special what happens when we're all here and, you know, eating food together. I didn't know you until a minute ago, and now I just feel like community creates something, really, really creates something. And you need enough difference in community and in families to create some change. But at the same time, there's something really incredible when people come together and sing together, or talk the language, or even fight. And, well, it's not too bad a fight, you know.
Yeah.
I think you need all those pieces to create good humans.
About an hour after our conversation, we arrived at the reception with the exhibit's co-curators, Jennifer Iredale, Riley Tai, Mark Loria, and Tina Farmillo. From the reception and Q&A, it was clear that the curatorial team were admirers of Paul's work. At one point during the event, Mark Loria spoke on the uniqueness of Paul's artistic process as a Coast Salish artist.
Well, I think Chris, I've been told by many artists that each generation innovates with Indigenous art, and I think Chris is at the forefront of innovation with mediums. I think because of his background with carpentry and mechanics, and I think he was building his own systems to create art. And I don't, you know, a lot of the Coast Salish artists use producers. If they're working in glass or metal or wood, but Chris developed systems where he was doing that himself, so he could fine-tune what he was doing. His designs are incredible. As we know, there's only four Chris can talk about this, but there's four design elements in Coast Salish art. It's very simplified, but when you look at Chris's art, he's using negative space with the elements in a way that creates depth and movement. He learned that from people ahead of him, probably his uncle Charles and Simon Charlie and Susan Point. But Chris's art sits in by itself because of the way he uses mediums and the way he, if you look at this, and Chris was pointing this out earlier, but the way the salmon eyes in the middle, you can see the little kind of crescent shapes with the eyes in the middle, but those are also the heads of people in a circle. Mm-hmm. So he's combining, if you look at this, it's just abstract forms, but if you start reading it and looking at it closer, this is his vision and the Coast Salish vision. So that's what I would say. Yeah. And Chris is, I would say, after those groups, the Coast Salish art was a lost art form until the late 70s, early 80s. If you think about the Coast Salish territories of Seattle, Vancouver, Victoria, they were densely populated, colonized areas. They couldn't hold secret potlatch bands like the Central and Northern Coast could, like the Kwakwaka'wakw could, the Haida could. So they had to revive a lost art form in a way. And it's, you may think this about Kosei Le Char, it's very modern because it came out of the spindle world, which the early artists in the late 70s or early 80s were studying in museums. That's all they could use to study.
Right.
I don't want to speak for you. But this is a bit of the history. So, you know, after that group, you know, Chris is at the forefront of that next generation.
After the reception, we spoke with co-curator Riley Tai on what it was like collaborating with Chris Paul on this exhibition, as well as what she hopes the residents of Main Island take away from the artwork on display.
What was the collaboration process like with Chris Paul? You know, how were certain decisions made, whether that be like what gets displayed or how it gets displayed? How did that work?
One way actually that's really funny is because his artwork is so often bought, a part of it is like, what could we get? Because it's just so, like, once he makes it, it is usually out of his hands, like, very soon. And so he had some of these very important pieces that he had not wanted to sell, such as To Fishes Formerly, which had to do with Nicholas Claxton's dissertation. And that's a glass piece with fish and salmon, and it's talking about reef nets and the Douglas Treaties and Wasanich rights to fishing and reef nets. And so he had felt uncomfortable selling that piece and wanted to donate it. So that's how that one naturally came in. And the others were supplied through the Mark Laurier Gallery. Mark represents him and has represented him for quite some time. And a lot of the decision processes are made on like the space, what we could get, and also talking to Mark about what feels right and like what should be shown in conversation with one another. And yeah, like how to make a cohesive statement and something that the viewers would understand as a collection when they come into the space.
Can you talk about the art a little bit? What would you say like one of your favorite pieces is, and could you describe it a little bit for our listeners?
Yeah, of course. One of my favorite pieces, there's a lot of good ones, but one that I'm thinking of right now is his Swan Sisters silkscreen, and it has these two swans together, and they're very playful, and there's all these salmon around them, and it's just talking about connections between women and sisterhood and how women are just there for each other and the beauty he sees within that. His works have a lot to do with relationships, and I think that's the main piece in the show that hits on matriarchy and the importance of that within Wasanich culture and a lot of indigenous cultures. It's also just very stunning. It's a symmetrical print, and there's a flatness there due to the silkscreen process that allows for all the details he creates in the technical process to really pop out into your eyes.
What's one thing for those who do attend the exhibition, for those who attended the reception, that you hope they take away? You know, one thing when speaking to Chris Paul about this exhibition that I noticed was like a big part of this for him was sort of introducing or making people familiar with Wasanich culture and the way that it relates to Main Island's history. So what's, I guess, one thing that you hope residents of Main Island who may not be as aware of that history take away?
I think one thing I would hope people take away is just the importance of reintegrating and ensuring cultural presence anywhere. I feel like it can be very easy to view certain places as a getaway or as somewhere to visit and then not fully understand the culture that's there, to not understand what has happened in the past to make it the certain island. Maine has a very deep and rich history with the displacement of indigenous peoples and also Japanese farmers. And that displacement has created a scene where things can evolve to today. And there's a lot of things you don't see when you visit the island. And there's a lot of things like you don't see when you can live there as well, unless you put the effort to, because they were made to not be seen. They were made to be invisible through colonization and this government displacement. And I think it's just something to remember, is that every place has a story and every spot has a memory there. And Chris talked a lot about blood memory and feeling like whenever he visits Manerskatok, as it's known in the Wasanich language, that it feels like coming home. And yeah, I think when you look through his artwork and the way he works through indigenous flora and fauna and people, you can tell that this is home, and it reminds you that, like, no matter where you go, you are at someone's home. You know, there's no land that was once empty.
Once again, that was our conversation with Riley Tai, co-curator on this Maine Island Community Library exhibition with Wasanich artist Chris Paul. If you want to see this exhibition for yourself, there are curatorial tours happening on June 20th and 21st, but it's recommended that you go online and search for the library's hours of operation beforehand. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca. We are back once again with Speak Up, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Thank you to Chris Paul and everyone else on Maine Island for providing a space for me to speak about this exhibition. We are going to be moving on to the next topic of the hour, which is the North Burnaby Record Roundup, which I attended this weekend on Saturday at the Lochdale Community Hall, right just at the bottom of Burnaby Mountain. But before we get into any of that, let's take a little bit of a music break with, I think, a band that, you know, most people that probably attended that record roundup are probably pretty big fans of. This is Time Will Tell with 5440.
Yeah.
That was Time Will Tell by 5440. And we're going to get right into the topic at hand, which is the North Burnaby Vinyl Record Roundup, which happened Saturday, June 20th. This was organized by the previous owners of Hooked, or the current owners of Hooked on Phono, a North Burnaby record store that is currently on pause, but they are still very involved within the local vinyl scene. And one of those ways they're involved is through events such as these, which basically brings together a whole bunch of record store owners, as well as just record enthusiasts that have insane, massive collections, to come together into a community hall and to sell their records. And I attended the event, and wow, it was very, very busy. There were moments where, you know, I was there very early on, so there was like a moment where I was like digging through a crate, and I look up, and immediately the room is just completely full. And that was not the case 3 minutes ago. So it definitely had a lot of turnout. It proved to me just how dedicated and how just numbers-wise large the vinyl record community is here, not just in Burnaby, but throughout the Lower Mainland, I'd imagine. I think a lot of people were coming from outside of Burnaby to attend. But, you know, while I was there, of course, I had to speak with some folks. So here's some interviews that I did while at the Burnaby Vinyl Record Roundup. Hope you enjoy. Wrong track. Okay. sorry about that. These are the interviews that I did from the Vinyl Record Roundup.
Sure. Hey, my name is Jonathan Laird. I used to own Hooked on Phono in Burnaby Heights, which is now Rick Roll Records. Be sure to stop by and pay Rick a visit there. In the meantime, I'm putting on record shows in Burnaby. We're at the North Burnaby Vinyl Record Roundup. This is our third show. We did two last year, one in the spring, one in the fall. This is the spring edition on a Saturday. We have 17 vendors, 28 tables, vinyl records, CDs, cassette tapes, and other memorabilia. It's a good opportunity to get into some people's collections that are avid collectors that might have oversized collections. So they bring stuff that stores might not have. There's a lot of highly curated collections here that you can leaf through and find some good deals. There's also people that are downsizing families' collections, that kind of thing. And there's also other shops that like to get out into the community. Today we've got Matterhorn Records, we've got ReLove Records from New West, Matterhorn from Vancouver.
Awesome. All right, thank you so much. And yeah, I'm gonna go around and speak to some people.
Awesome, we're here from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. today, Saturday, June 20th. Come on by.
All right, thanks so much. Could you just give an introduction of yourself?
Hey, I'm Johnny Matter from Matterhorn Records.
All right, and what brings you here today?
We're here at the North Burnaby